Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortes Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts. Canada Day is a complex holiday, and CICK explored the range of emotions and celebrations from Houston to Prince Rupert. On June 24th, a significant milestone occurred, the initialing of the Kitsilas Treaty. After over 30 years of negotiations, this treaty affirms Kitsilas' self-determination and aligns with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, or UNDRIP, and provincial laws which aim to strengthen the nation-to-nation relationship. CFNR's Sabrina Spencer has that scoop. And Sam Tudor is a musician and producer making sweet, soft songs. Sam is originally from the Cariboo region and is currently on tour across BC with a stop on Cortes Island. Louis Belcourt spoke to Sam for CKTZ News.
Sam Tudor, a Vancouver-based recording artist, is performing their newly released EP Across BC and has added a Cortes Island show to the tour. Sam is a self-taught musician and recording artist who has been recording and releasing music since 2014. The artist has never before performed on the island, but spontaneously booked the event at Manson's Hall when suggested to by a friend who has connections on Cortes. Hidden Minute, Sam's new EP, was released on June 15th. The release show will be in Vancouver on Friday, June 28th, and the Cortes show will be on Tuesday, July 2nd at Manson's Hall. I spoke with Sam for more on the release and the upcoming tour.
Hi, my name's Sam Tudor. I'm a songwriter and producer and musician. I grew up in rural interior British Columbia in the Cariboo region, but spend most of the time in Vancouver now. And yeah.
Where did you get your start in music?
I guess I started playing music in high school and I was just playing guitar, but I think I was more interested in recording before I was actually interested in being a musician. I discovered GarageBand and I just love the idea of recording and like on those early Macs. And I feel like I actually had to learn to play music after the fact just because I wanted something to record.
Did you go through any formal training or was recording just always a personal practice and sort of a self-taught thing?
No formal training at all. It was all self-taught. And I had a lot of time. I grew up at a kids camp in the woods in the Cariboo. My parents run a kids camp near Williams Lake. So it was pretty remote and there was a lot of time to just mess around with things with my two brothers, and we made movies and wrote songs and had lots of time to listen to music on long bus rides. So definitely not any serious formal training, that's for sure.
You're quite prolific. You've released multiple albums and EPs at this point, and you're just coming out with this new EP called Hidden Minute. Is the tour that you're on right now a sort of your release tour for this new EP?
Yeah, it is. And it feels great. We've never really done it this way where we get to go on tour right after the EP comes out. The EP came out last Saturday and then the day after we played the first show. So I'm really appreciating that. It feels a lot more immediate, especially because it took so long to finish the EP. So it feels like this celebration. And also the way I record is pretty internal, I guess. I do everything just in my room and one track at a time often. And so this is like the inverse of that, to get to play the songs with friends in a lot of different unique places. So it's refreshing.
Tell me about how this project feels different or maybe even the same of some of your other projects. What does this new release mean for you?
That's a good question. I feel this is definitely the first time where something I've made has felt really accurate. I feel like in the past, because so much of this recording that I've done is just trying to learn how to do it, and I really just love tinkering with and layering sounds in my room and stuff, and so a lot of the times the stuff I've recorded in the past, it just is a result of how much I know, or I'm limited by what's around me, what instruments are around me, and at this camp where I grew up, we only had a couple different instruments, and those kind of dictated how the records sounded. And I feel like now I have a lot of peers who I really love to record with, and I have enough tools now that I was able to actually make something that is more true to me. I guess with previous records, even though I'm proud of previous records, they were all the end product with me just being like, oh, I guess that's how that turned out. They were all just accidents. And this one feels like it was a little more, I was able to execute. I was able to step back and say, oh yeah, that is what I meant to say. So that's something that feels pretty different. And I've never done an EP before also. It was interesting to just only focus on four songs. And I actually did it because I thought it would be faster, because I'm pretty neurotic and I tend to beat myself up finishing an album. And I thought making an EP would be a little more chill, but I just ended up spending the same amount of energy on only four songs. So I don't know.
Cortez people are super excited to hear that you're actually adding a Cortez show to this tour. What brought you to book this show on Cortez?
One thing I'm really excited about the entire tour is that it's entirely house shows, with the exception of our Vancouver show. And last summer we toured with, you know, in larger venues and bars and stuff. But I thought it would be cool to just explore the songs in a really intimate setting. And we have a lot of connections to small towns in BC and the Cariboo. So it's just felt pretty good to drive around. And yeah, the whole tour has a really specific energy to it that's really different from anything I've done before because of the nature of it all being house shows. And I know Cortez show isn't a house show, but our friend Robbie Banks invited us to play on Cortez with him and his bandmate Gemma. And I feel like a big part of what we like to do when we tour is like to see new places and find new things. And we've never been to Cortez before, and I've heard only good things about it. And it just seems like really aligned with how we want this whole tour to be, like playing in cool, unique spaces that aren't necessarily just loud bars or venues or anything like that, and explore the new songs in a different way and every night in a different setting. And it just, when we were invited to play on Cortez, it just seemed perfect for this tour.
Thanks so much for speaking with me, Sam.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Louis Beaucourt, CKTZ News, Cortez Island.
In Dawaloan, I'm Sabrina Spencer with The Journey Continues, highlighting local stories that matter to you. Chief Glenn Bennett of the Kitsilas First Nations, joined by Federal Minister Gary Anadanaskri and BC Minister Murray Rankin, marked a significant moment on June 24th with the initialing of the Kitsilas Treaty. The treaty, which will undergo a ratification process, promises to recognize Kitsilas' right to governance, land ownership, and resource management in alignment with UNDRIP and provincial legislation. Chief Bennett, along with Cyril Bennett-Nabes, spoke with CFNR. They mentioned anticipated benefits, including improved community services and economic opportunities, reflecting Kitsilas' vision for future generations. Chief Bennett says they are aiming for treaty ratification by spring of 2025.
Over 30 years we've been in this process. Originally, we started out under the Tsimshian Tribal Council. Then that organization was dissolved, and then we became part of what is now known as the TFN Treaty Society.
How does Kitsilas plan to ensure that the rights of all community members, including the elders and youth, are respected and protected under the new governance framework?
So, leading up to today, the initialing, we've consulted with the elders on every step of the way. So we have meetings with the elders to hear from them. If they have any suggestions or concerns, that's where we listen to our elders.
Can you elaborate on the consultation process with neighboring First Nations during the negotiation of the treaty and how their input has been incorporated?
So we've started that process. We've met with Kikapla on two occasions, once in their village. Our delegation traveled to Kikapla, present what we have been negotiating, hear any concerns they may have, They've come to Kitsilas. We've met with them here. Likewise, with the Haisla, we've had three meetings with the Haisla. And same thing, if they have any concerns, we try and address it at that table. We've met with the Nisga Nation on, I believe, two occasions with President Clayton and some of our other delegations. We've extended the invitation to meet with Lhkloamps. No response to four of our invitations that we've sent to them. So the door is still open. We're willing to listen to them. I think their concerns, from what I see in the media, is with BC and Canada. That's where they have a concern, but our process will continue to be an open process where we're more than willing to sit down with Lhkloamps and their nine allied tribes.
What are the key environmental protections and sustainability measures included in the treaty to safeguard natural resources in Kitsilas traditional territory?
Very good question. A treaty does not just speak to individual rights of Kitsilas citizens, but it also speaks to the future power of the Kitsilas government with regard to the natural resources, the finances, not only the finances, but also our citizenship. After the potential effective date, Kitsilas will have lawmaking authorities to define the way in which the land is used, to define the way in which water is allocated, to define the way in which citizenship is provided to what is today our membership.
And how will the proposed treaty impact traditional land use practice and cultural heritage preservation within the Kitsilas territory?
So in the treaty, there is contemplated joint management areas, areas in which not only the province and the federal government, but also Kitsilas will actively play a management role around the planning, the pre-planning, and the future development of these areas within the territory. So areas like the areas that surround Kitsilas IR1, from Kitsilas Mountain to Bornite Mountain, or more in particular, the Kleanza Estuary, the Kleanza Watershed.
What are the anticipated benefits of the treaty for future generations of Kitsilas members, and how will the community ensure intergenerational equity?
So we plan to give back to the community. We've already started it. The late Mel Bevan, seeing what some other First Nations were doing in creating a Kitsilas-only pension plan to our elders who are 65 and older. It's a small amount, but it's a start. We provide them $200 a month. Everyone that turns 65 will automatically be enrolled. The amount of land that we're looking at for treaty settlement lands is very vast. I hear from people that come and see what we're doing. They tell me that they're very impressed that we have, in my mind, a significant amount of treaty settlement lands. We have lands up at the airport that were partners with the City of Terrace. I can only see that getting better. Widening. And so we own the lands that are adjacent to IR1, between IR1 and Highway 16. Those lands belong to us. And so we're looking at future development, be it a convenience store, gas bar, anything that the community wishes to put forward. We have a plan that was developed by the community, and we're certainly willing to follow what they see envisioned for Kitsilas.
And will the treaty impact healthcare, education, and social services within the Kitsilas community?
I can see it only benefiting, getting better, more funding that we can provide to our community for healthcare, education, that will increase. So certainly there is benefits, and it can only get better. We're going to, triple the funding that we receive from the federal government and the province for healthcare. That's important to our people, so we want to ensure that there's sufficient funding available for our elders. You see it in our 40 units. 10 units are designated for elders. So it's in my mind that that is very, that's an improvement. Our elders can live in the community, be close to their family, so we'll continue that type of development.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to share or add at all today?
Well, thank you for giving me an opportunity to share what we're trying to accomplish under this treaty. And we look forward to hopefully ratifying our treaty in the spring of 2020.
Today, we'll bring you the sights and sounds of Canada Day celebrations with Pam Hassan reporting from Houston. And I'm here in the coast in Prince Rupert. Stay with us.
My name is Reed Skelton-Morvan. I'm the Master of Ceremonies today for the Canada Day event at the Nishka Hall.
And Reed, maybe tell me, what does Canada Day mean for you?
Canada Day is definitely, it's over the past few years especially, I think after May of 2021, it's become a lot more complex, a little bit more of a complex conversation. I think for me, Canada Day, it's finding a way forward, celebrating, while also having the time and the space to acknowledge and reflect some of the darker chapters of Canada's history. So it's holding space for both of those conversations. So folks coming to this event, you know, many are sporting orange, some are sporting red, you know, there's kind of a mix of both. And I think for us, it's finding that way forward through connection and coexistence and sharing with one another. Yeah, we've got a bunch of different folks here. So there's a lot of organizers from an event that we try to host usually about every month or so is North Coast Night. So you've got a lot of vendors. We've got some speakers that'll be coming up and some dance groups as well. So lots of celebration, lots of drumming, singing, and fried bread, of course. That's like the game changer right there. That's what everybody comes for. So, yeah.
You got to have fried bread.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, we're here at the Nishka Hall. It's clearly a really good turnout. As you mentioned, it is a complex history, especially these days. What do you hope people kind of take away from the event today and from, you know, future Canada Days?
Yeah, I think the biggest take home is acknowledging that history exists, you know, and not everyone is going to be celebrating Canada Day the same way. I think a lot of folks will take time to reflect, some to grieve, you know, things like that, because, I mean, even in itself and the formation of the country, like there was a lot of darker history that, again, it's kind of clouded a lot of that. And I think for folks to be able to acknowledge that, recognize that, but also find ways to respectfully coexist, celebrate in which ways you want to participate. So, yeah.
Okay, Reed, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Ron Nice. I'm from the Nass Valley. Nishka.
And Ron, can you tell me, what does Canada Day mean for you?
Well, Canada Day really means to me that we have different people that arrived in our homelands. That's what it really means to me. But they became Canadians, right? As they lived here for 100 years. But we've been here for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So we've always welcomed newcomers to our lands. We are very generous people. And so Canada Day today, we see them coming, and they're still coming, and they enjoy Canada as a place to live, a place of good economics, good living, plenty of food, and all these kind of enjoyable things in our lives. So, yeah, that's what it means to me, and I'm very happy to come together with the rest of my First Nations brothers to show our traditional foods, to show our traditional dancing and speaking. We cannot lose this. We have to keep this going for our future children to know who they are and to be very proud of who they are.
Ron, one thing that always strikes me on days like today, the histories are that a lot of Niskas, a lot of Tsimshians, a lot of Wet'suwet'en, a lot of Gitxsan, 80 years ago went to war and fought for Canada. Although back then, Canada didn't take too kindly to them, but they felt that their duty to go and fight for their homeland and for Canada. What are your kind of thoughts on that perspective, knowing that a lot of Niskas did that?
Yes, that's correct. We do have a few Niskas that did go to war. Second World War, my grandfather, Eli Gosnell, was in charge of the Rangers in the north. And they were the ones that made sure the people that were warring against us didn't come through the northern part. And there was a group of Nishka that were formed then, but you don't hear too much about it. But they were there, and we have it in our history books. And we could tell about it because others probably don't know about it. And yes, and so we're proud of that. And our people always say, you have to stand up for your rights, for your freedom. And that's what they did.
Okay, Ron, thank you. Happy Canada Day.
Yeah, thank you very much. Happy Canada Day, everybody.
Robin Martin from Prince Rupert.
Great, Robin. And you just won a Community Merit Award. Tell me about some of what you had to do to win one of these awards, but also how does it feel to be recognized here in Prince Rupert?
It feels nice to be recognized for the work. I don't do it most for that. I want to have good opportunities for the community to have fun and get out. And yeah, so it was nice to be recognized for that.
What are some of the things that you've done in the community over these years? Your father also picked up one of these awards. So how does it kind of come together? It's a bit of a family affair.
Yeah, mostly working with special events over the past years. We do the fireworks on Canada Day and Winterfest and many other things.
I guess, Robin, maybe tell me about the fireworks later on. I hear it's going to be out in the harbor.
Yeah, so we have a barge. It's been donated by Wainwright Marine. They donate the barge. Banstra Transportation donates the trailer for it. And we set off just off of Mariners Park in the harbor here. And it'll be about 10-minute show. And it's great this year. We have a whole bunch of new pyrotechnicians that we've just brought on board. So it will be their first show. So it's going to be great.
Right on. And I guess, Robin, you know, the big question today, complex history in Canada, but what does Canada Day mean to you?
Just an opportunity to celebrate where you're from.
All right. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Do you like Canada Day?
Yeah.
Yeah? What are you hoping to see on Canada Day?
Rush.
Here with Mayor of Houston, Mayor Shane Breenan, and tell me how you think today's going.
Today looks great, a good turnout. Not perfect weather, but no rain and warm, so everyone's happy and a great day for us all to celebrate Canada Day.
Totally. Is this like regular turnout? Is it, because I've never been to Houston for Canada Day before, so does this look like a good, happy turnout? I mean, you've got three bouncy castles, so that's got to be a sign of prosperity.
Yeah, I think it's a good turnout. I know a lot of people camp out of town on the long weekend, but still a lot of locals are in town, and a great day for all of us, so happy Canada Day.
Thank you.
My name is Gloria Tiljo-Mann from Houston.
And so you gave the opening remarks here for the ceremony because it's July 1st. We're in Houston in front of the Banshell for their celebrations. But you mentioned that it was usually your father that did these remarks.
Yes.
So can you tell me a little bit about maybe who your father is and then how that felt for you to do the introduction?
Yeah, it was nerve-wracking for me because I'm not good at public speaking. But my father has been opening the celebration of Canada Day every year for probably I don't know how many years. They always asked him to come and do the opening. His name is Russell Tiljo, and he's passed now for going on 2 years in September. And his chief name is Lachdilier, and that means quiet, the man with the how does that go? The quiet man with knowledge, I think, something to that effect. Dad's not here for me to ask what it is. Yeah, so yeah, it was an honor for me to be here and do the opening on behalf of my father. I'm his second oldest daughter, and he's had 10 kids. So, 9, actually, lost a brother, 2. And it was an honor to represent him today.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Virginia.
Hi, Virginia. So, how long have you lived in Houston?
Since 1973.
Okay, what brought you here?
My ex worked for Hydro. We came from Manitoba, and we went to Hudson Hope first for a year, and then we came here.
Okay. What do you love about Houston?
It's friendly. It's an awesome place. I mean, I've been here for just about over 50 years.
Yeah, 71. Oh, quick math.
No, 73.
Oh, 73. That's 51 years.
Yeah.
What do you think about today's celebrations?
They're awesome. They are, like, here they've got so many things for the seniors. Like, it's just awesome.
How old are you? Do you mind me asking?
75.
Okay. So, here we can. I don't want to stop you getting your popcorn. We'll get your popcorn. We are in the line for popcorn. I'll grab it for you. I'll grab for him. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
No worries.
So this is Princess. She don't like. No. I swore you left it open
just to try. Okay. I guess I just want to. You were saying, well, I asked you before because you're wearing a Tournament of Hearts, yeah. Red Deer 2012. So were you a curler?
Yes, I was.
Were you good?
Well, I don't know. It wasn't too bad, but...
Did you ever play for the Olympics?
No. Not that good.
Okay, I guess just one last thing. Yeah, like we had kind of said that it was nice, but favorite thing about living in Houston?
Like I said, because people are so friendly and there's lots to do.
Yeah.
Like for me, anyway.
Yeah. Thank you for talking to me.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Okay.
My name is Tom Uverman from Houston, and we're at Canada Day celebrations in Houston. We've had a very good day. The people, the band was great, and the hamburgers and hot dogs were great. And met lots of new people, and just a fantastic day. Canada's a great country, a country where many people would wish and hope to be that don't live here, and so it's been a wonderful day.
Awesome. Can I just ask you one more thing? How long have you lived in Houston?
1948.
What's your favorite thing about it?
How's that?
What's your favorite thing about living in Houston?
The people.
Yeah,
it's always the people. It always comes on to the people.
It does.
And as a community, we've had our ups and downs, you know, economic-wise.
Yep.
And right now, we're kind of, you know, with the sawmill.
Yep.
We'll get through it, but we got to work a little harder to get that to happen.
And,
yeah.
And just so I have it on record, how long have you been on council?
A total of 33 years.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Jim Daniel, Houston Fire Chief. We just were asked to bring the trucks over for Canada Day, spray some water in the park for the kids that want to run through it and get wet. It's not overly warm, that's all.
I think when kids see a big hose.
Yes, yes. So hopefully they'll come over and get a little wet. Okay. Have some fun.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, folks. Happy Canada Day. Thanks for having Hillbilly Scrabble here at the Houston Canada Day festivities. Hope you got enough cake and burgers and dogs. Yeah, thanks again for coming.
What I didn't get enough of is Careless Whisper by George Michael. Somebody's gonna honk that on that horn. Come on.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenay, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.